first three pages of my autobiography, chapter one. Roi newydd, ar y goes hir a'i goesau, deiar wych a byr gyda'i neidiau, hwyl i gael, ceir golau, dros y mawn yn drosi mewn. I was born on 26th of May 1950 in this house. After a long and difficult labour, my mother almost died. She was Mary Jones, later Mary Evans, 1926 to 2002. Just before she died in 2002, she admonished me, only half in humour, but with a head as big as mine, there must be something in it. Others who don't know me at all have said so too, but in truth, I am quiet and reserved and just like studying. I am sometimes forced to blow my own trumpet, but I do not like it. I had the opposite nature to my father, who was Edward Ivor Evans, 1922 to 2000, the late Reverend Gareth Hopkins of Craigan Park, wrote in an obituary that after talking to Eddie Bunwin, he was made vividly and memorably aware of his opinions, and sometimes he might even have been right. He was brought up at a Greithig, across the river from Craigan Horse Castle, and descended on his mother's side from the Morgan or Aubrey family of Blintower. Morgan, the squire, lived in Craigan Horse Castle for 2 years before selling it to Adelina Martin. He was entirely well-speaking and communicated with Patty through an interpreter. He was an industrialist, and this was a powerful farmer. The Morgan brothers find King Arthur, written about mid-80s. To the north, the glacier road and cut rock as the black shotman sliced coal with powder. The black mountain glistens with limestone. Black Silurian mountain, crag and water embrace Arthurian in the paths of night. Llyn y Fan Fach, Our Lady of the Lake, veiled above Patty's castle, crag and horse. Cut by the wind's hard teeth, the caves lie low. Hid in time's grain that the ploughman had mend. Here down the Rogov is the ossuary where ancient bones of certitude were carved. Two Morgan brothers in a coracle paddled across time to Arthur's far shore, and mighty were the idols of their cave. My mother was descended on her father's side from the Harbard family, another entirely well-speaking family. Her great-grandfather was Tom Thomas, Harvard of T. Traus Concavinen, one of the most beautiful valleys I know of, and her grandmother was Mary Harvard, who was illiterate. Her father, Thomas Elling Jones, was one of the most gifted and cultured men I have ever known anywhere. Both Aubreys and Harvards were of Norman descent and intermarried many times into the royal Celtic line of Bleddyn ap Eimas, Prince of Brycheiniog. I knew none of this until a few years ago when some kindly genealogist worked it all out on the internet. I thought that Normans were red-haired savages in tinpot helmets and long nose guards. My earliest memories, very vague and dreamlike when I was less than 2 years old, are of an iron lying in the bed next to mine in the children's ward of Morriston Hospital. It was an iron lying of a very young patient who was being treated for polio to help him breathe. I was in there for an emergency operation for intestinal twisting. My mother said I was turning green with a big lump. Prototype for an amoeba. Now I know that the surgeon must have done brilliant work, because I had been misdiagnosed until I almost died. This was not the fault of the overworked GP, the kindly Dr. Hargest. Such a diagnosis is very difficult. My father said that I should just be allowed to die because I was in such pain, presumably. But my grandfather, Thomas Irving Jones, and the Reverend T. Allens prayed fervently for my recovery, being most devout Baptists. It was science and medicine that saved me, but someone must have heard them, and even then I was thinking of Cartan geometry and strict meter poetry. Welsh is the language of heaven, as I repeat this old cliche not to make fun of them at all, but out of respect. My mother told me all this, I remember nothing of it. The earliest photograph of me I have now is at the age of about one, making an intensive botanical study of grass on Mynydd Gyllywysgan. I look fat, big-headed and content. Later on, there are photographs of the whole family, my parents, my sister Gwenydd and myself on visits to Father Christmas in the post-war Swansea shops, an era when large parts of Swansea were bombed out ruined houses, upon which death had fallen randomly because of some foreign dictator aiming at the docks and the sea. They looked very kind, very young, very innocent people, although in one or two of them my mother is exhausted, probably from worry about my operation and slow recovery and post-war rationing. I am in a school cap with wondrous eyes transfixing the commercialized Santa. I have a very vague memory of those bald and white-bearded, red-coated individuals, and never did twig that Father Christmas was different every year. I have sharper and most happy memories of Christmas at Pontevedra, when I was still young enough to believe all of it earnestly, piously and avidly, maybe 4 or 5 years old. There was a real Christmas tree with Walt Disney Fantasia lights going on moth, hypnosis among the scent of real Norwegian spruce, no bolo, no plastic. There were paper decorations across the wooden beamed ceiling of the best room of the small stone house, which was transformed magically for the occasion with a warm and glowing coal fire, throwing shadows on warmer walls and wooden ceiling. Both grandparents were there, both parents of a younger sister, Gwenydd. Those moments should have lasted forever, and indeed do. Christmas was a bad time for turkeys, which we grew on the farm. Not an artificial Tesco turkey, but a formidable, free-roaming, dangerous 35-pounder that dominated the table, defeathered and roasted a glowing brown, stuffed with thyme and onions, surrounded by an array of vegetables. All around were minced pies, pudding, Christmas cake, and a bottle of pristine sherry for Christmas morning, when Edward Ivar took me to see Raymond in Glyce near Clydach, where he still lives now. On Christmas morning, there was a wild excitement of presents and stockings filled with more than a child could ever imagine. Amidst contentment, I had premonitions of the future, of time dancing backwards and forwards. These also flashed into my mind on some lazy weekend, half asleep in the hay shed. What would it be like in 2010, with parents and grandparents inconceivably absent? Well, they are here right now, in imagination, maybe. Their legacy is certainly here to be the scientist again. In the school canteen at Christmas, I took part in a play of three wise men on Bethlehem, all in the beautiful Welsh language of Aileen Chapel, and the Elizabethan Bible of William Morgan, another scholar's, that towering prose masterpiece that kept the old language alive. These are the earliest memories I have of that time, the vivid, happy time. At Christmas, the chapel took on the same magic, the communion, Weilenbrand, the brilliant and gentle minister, T.R. Lewis, the formidable deacons, my grandfather, the head deacon. The wine was real, but being Baptist was not transmuted or transubstantiated. The bread was real bread, but bread alone. In that sublime chapel, all was metaphor that lasts forever. The wine was so real that my grandmother had to be carried back from chapel one day, all through the village, to her eternal embarrassment. She was a small and pious lady, not used to transmutation. This was the gentle nonconformist humour of the family. I had an inkling that I was living in a savage world, but that was outside and in a different tongue entirely. My earlier dream-like memories of less than 2 years old are of being carried back to this house alive from hospital, stitched up inside and out. I remember the sharp pain of the stitches that sometimes doubled me up for hours like a boxer hit in the diaphragm. I remember the anxious eyes of my mother and grandmother, and occasionally remember the doctor being called to give what little reassurance he could. I was and am alive only because of this unknown surgeon's skill and because of the National Health Service. Without that, I would have been allowed to die, as was the custom of a sick infant, beyond recovery. So, I am a fervent Bevanite socialist, after the famous work of an Irene Bevan in the Labour government of 1945 to 1951. So is my uncle Raymond, who recently visited me July 2010, after 45 years, and left after 5 minutes for an appointment. He reminds me very strongly of my late Quicksilver father. He told me to come and see him with a family history, so I did. We are not therefore the closest of families in one sense, but then again, we understand each other so well, we do not have to say anything, even after 45 years. It is as if time never happened and was never invented. Raymond is a close friend of Roger Morgan, the First Minister of the Welsh Assembly, both being fluent Welsh speakers. In about 1940, the two brothers, Edward Ivor, then about 18 and Raymond about 7, helped in the excavation of a newly discovered Ogoveskin. This is now a famous cave system known to have many miles of passages. Our ancestral cousins, the Morgan brothers, Tommy and Jeff, discovered Darnell Ogof in 1912. In our family, all spoke Welsh, as did all the village and most of the coal mine. The latter was an inevitable and evil presence, as danger was dust in the lungs. At the time, I knew nothing about this, except that Tommy Lynn could not work. His breathing was laboured, he walked with a stick and used a respirator, we called it a pump, or pump, and sometimes his eyes turned a lighter shade of blue and looked like Basby into the distance. Tom Aileen had the frightening blue eyes of a Viking, his mother being Mary Havard of Cwm Cadinan. Havard is an ancient Norman and Norwegian or Danish name. He looked right through people like an X-ray machine and was the carbon copy of my cousin Floyd Havard of Craigenpark, the 4 times British boxing champion, about to deliver a knockout blow on YouTube. However, Tom Aileen was pre-diacon or head deacon of Aileen Capel of Craigenpark and delivered knockout blows only after a bad sermon or some misdeed, admonished in public in the manner of the Baptists. I wrote this angling to him, the National Coal Board never gave him much compensation. Wherever he is now, perhaps this world. A hymn, Lord. Dia dda ddeil y dwylaw, o'i spyrd yn ysbryd y syr ystaw, baner goleini gyrfawr, a dan ei byd, dyn y bawb.